everyone.
Welcome back to Katamita. I'm Yusuf.
And I'm Zuby.
This is our third episode, and today we're going to be talking a little bit about grieving, especially during this holiday season, and stuff that can be helpful or not helpful to hear and have to respond to in your grief. Even though, you know, during our podcast, grief is probably going to be woven throughout a lot of our subjects because it is kind of ubiquitous in our lives right now. This weekend in particular, we're really forced to confront our grief because we're both working on victim impact statements this weekend. If you don't know what that is, that's when a case goes to court and the people that are impacted by, let's say, the loss of a life can write in to the judge or the prosecutors and, you know, talk about what the defendant's actions really meant to their life.
For example, if you were in a car accident and you were paralyzed or you had to have surgery or you have pain, that's the things that you would talk about and put in your impact statement.
Right. And additionally, like this, we are in the middle of the holiday season, and we recognize that this is a lot of people's first holiday seasons after losing a loved one, and we understand how that can really reshape or reframe, honestly, a good chunk of the year, the time frame that you're ending your year on and starting off a new year on, and how it can really funk things up a little bit. So, yeah, we hope you enjoy our conversation, and we hope for your participation as well. We will definitely have some questions for you that we hope you can respond to and leave some thoughts and feedback.
Yeah, this is definitely the year of firsts for us with the loss of our mom, and so we'll have a couple episodes, but we just thought we would talk about this now because of the victim impact statements and the holidays, and it's always looming over us, you know, grief like this black cloud, and there can be little rays of sunshines that peek through, and sometimes that is in the holidays when you're with family and laughing and whatnot, but sometimes this is a time when you have to redefine traditions and how you're going to do things new when this person is gone. But one of the things that we were going to focus on for this episode is what is helpful and not helpful, but from our point of view, as Yusuf and I are so different, how grief can be so different for each person. So right now you might hear some music in the background, and that is our stepdad playing piano. And that is one of the things that he loves, and our parents would sit at the piano and sing together, and he would play for her.
He wrote songs for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's upstairs, he's playing the piano, and we're downstairs recording, and you know, he's so sweet. He sent us a little text. Oh, I'm just going to play the piano for a few minutes. If you guys are recording, let me know and I'll stop if it interferes.
Yeah.
And, you know, neither of us are going to tell him to stop because we understand that that's a very therapeutic avenue for him to remember our mom and
absolutely.
And their love and their relationship. And honestly, it's cute little background music.
Yeah.
So if you hear it, you know, feel free to leave some love for our stepdad in the comments and we'll relay that to him.
Yeah, he's actually very, very good. So, but, you know, one of the things is that each of us, when you lose somebody, you have a different relationship to that person. So, to me, it's my mother, but also as I was growing older, our relationship was changing. For our stepdad, it's the love of his life, the person he was going to spend the rest of his life with and his retirement with.
Mm-hmm.
For our aunts and uncles, it was their baby sibling.
Mm-hmm.
So we recognize that everybody's going to experience grief differently and then process and live it out differently,
mm-hmm.
I think. And so that's something that we thought about. Yusuf and I, yes, we're siblings. Yes, we had the same parents, but grief is going to be different for us.
Right.
And so, for example, our dad versus our mom. When we lost our dad, you know, for my dad, I was older. I was in my 20s. I was in graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew he was sick. And there were times where I think I grieved him before he passed away. I remember getting up out of class and leaving because I would just suddenly start crying. And I realized later that I was that was grief. I was grieving him before he passed. Whereas Yusuf, like, how was that for you?
So, yeah, it seems like you kind of had a lot of that anticipatory grief, whereas for me, when Daddy was sick, you know, or actually when Daddy passed, I was 9 years old, so... Yeah. You know, I was really young, and I don't think I was really grappling or struggling with the concepts of long-term sickness and death, and especially at such a young age, I don't think I really realized how long I was going to be living life without my dad.
Yeah.
You know,
you
and
didn't have a long time frame. You were only at 9 years of your life,
exactly.
And he was in it.
Yeah, and I think it really, even though, of course, the years after his passing were hard, because I had to quickly understand the concept of death, you know, now that he was gone. Of course, I do vividly remember being in the hospital and mommy, or maybe you and mommy, talking to me and saying, you know, you do have to prepare for the reality that he might not get through this, you know, and as a 9 year old, I don't know, like, I think the words came in one ear, went out the other, you know, because it's just such a hard concept to grapple with. And yet, I think as I got older, especially in my teens, later teens, I really started appreciating the profoundness of losing my dad. And I think it had a lot to do with, you know, struggling with my identity, the impact that struggling with my identity had on my mom, you know, wondering what it would have been like if they were both here, how they could have navigated this, how we would have navigated this as a team.
Yeah.
But at the same time, getting back to the grief itself, you know, I don't think I really appreciated the grief as a kid as much as I do now. I think I feel Daddy's loss a lot more heavily now than I did as a kid because I understand it more.
But also now we've lost both of our parents.
Right.
So losing mommy, which was sudden and traumatic, it's like you lose her, but you lose... I feel like I lost my dad again, too, because it's like the finality of having both of your parents be gone.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't matter how old you are. I just met somebody a few weeks ago, and he was probably in his 60s, and he started tearing up talking about his mom he lost, who was in her 80s. It just, it's hard when you're as lucky as we were to have such amazing human beings as parents. It's very hard. But with mommy, too, it's a different season of life. You know, now I am a mother. I have two young children. And so it's just to say that the way, you know, each grief experience is so different and sort of unique. But also what we were going to talk about is some of the things that might be similar for a lot of people. Like, what are some of the things that... you know, just basic grief education could help us all out with? What are some of those commonalities? So I've just noticed there is this lack of grief education, and trying to read books about it and navigate this, these, you know, five stages of grief that people talked about by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was never meant to be actually the five stages of grief for people who are grieving the loss of a loved one. It was the people who were dying were the people that were studied. And so those who have been through grief know that it's not stages. It's not linear. It's a convoluted staircase that you go up and down and waves that crash and hit you. You can be fine for a day, and the next day I felt like I got punched in the chest. I keeled over with so much pain. But I think part of it is, like, sometimes you're expected to just get up and go. We know that those of us that are working, that sometimes you get 3 days, if any, for bereavement leave.
Right. And I remember, you know, talking to you about your whole FMLA and reasonable accommodation situation. Like, the grief is not there.
You're as just an like, option. What do you mean? You're just supposed to go back to work and deal, work and do it and figure it out. And if you can't, you're weak. There's something wrong with you. You know, it's a disorder, prolonged grief disorder. So,
not to mention how it can exacerbate all of your already existing mental health problems, like depression and anxiety and all that.
Right, which are different, but can totally get worse when you are actively grieving and your brain just has this
fog over it.
Fog, and also just this overwhelming overload that's trying to get sorted out.
Yeah, because you're back in a state of vulnerability and survival, you know. Yeah. You're back to, for me, I feel like I'm back to 9 years old. You know, I'm back to, you know, at least when I was 9, I had mommy to navigate us through the loss.
Right.
You know, she became mom and dad.
Yeah.
You know, provided, made sure to be there. And there were certainly times where I saw her vulnerability in grieving my dad. But now that she's the one gone.
Yeah. We're like, who do we look to to see?
Who do we learn how to deal with this from?
Right. And we're the, like, and for me, I definitely feel like I'm supposed to be the matriarch all of a sudden,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that I'm supposed to show everybody how to grieve. Certainly for my children,
mm-hmm.
I feel very responsible in how I am grieving and showing them
mm-hmm.
that, yes, it's okay to grieve. Yes, you need to process. Yes, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It feels yucky.
Yeah, and that brings us to another point, which is that I especially feel like here in the Western world or in America, like, we are a very death-denying, in a sense,
yes.
society. You yeah. know, it's
live
very...
Live longer.
Yeah,
we
it's
focused on
very hard to talk about death here. People get so uncomfortable. And I feel like, you know, everybody here accepts the inevitability of death. It's going to happen one day in the future.
Yeah.
You know, it's happening to all my neighbors. It's happening to, you know, all these old folks. It's happening to all this. It'll happen one day. But what we kind of deny is, like, that it's impending
mm-hmm.
and that it can happen at literally any moment. At any place. Like, you could literally be sitting on your couch, you know. And also that there are real life impacts and, like, preparations you can or should make for it. We don't like talking about that. Oh, I need to get my affairs in order. You know, even as a 27-year-old, I think about that now.
Yes.
Because
it's put mortality in, you know,
in orbit.
So that's something I actually wanted to ask you about, because you are, you know, quite a bit younger than me. Because that's something that I have felt, this, like, sort of impending mortality and
mm-hmm.
and one of the scary, like, what has been most scary to you?
I think definitely that that any place, anytime that it can hit you, you know, it's so difficult to even just get in the car these days.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it is.
If it's nighttime, someone wants to invite me out, I'm like, are you picking me up?
Yeah.
You know, and even if they do, the whole time I'm in the passenger seat, like, you know,
because
mommy was in the back seat,
yeah,
you know, and, yeah, you know.
It's secondary trauma.
Exactly. You know, it has been very difficult to just move through life not always thinking about what could happen next at any moment. You know, I'm always, like, when you call me at night, I'm always worried the first thing you're going to say is that you were in a car accident.
Mm.
You know, that's rough. But
yeah. And these are the things that, like, it takes a long time to, like, for your mindset to get out of that
survival mode.
Survival, high fight or flight mm-hmm. mode. You know, as soon as I got the call,
yeah,
I shared my location with you guys.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know where they were.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call. We're in a terrible accident. I can hear my stepdad going into shock, and I don't know where they are.
Yeah.
So the first thing I did was I started sharing my location.
Yeah.
But these are just the things that I agree, like, the impending mortality for me, and then also just being a woman who's turned 40, you know, there's a lot of this, what naturally would have happened anyways, this question of what am I supposed to do with my life? And
mm-hmm.
It's really come to a head with, you know, what legacy, I'm here, I'm left here. What am I supposed to be on this earth for?
And
what legacy am I going to leave behind?
And you were/are really at a point in time in life where your mother is your best friend and your guide to get you through, you know, how do I raise these two young kids? You know what I mean? Like, how do I, you know, how do I, you know, deal with these difficulties at work the way our amazing professional of a mother did?
Right.
You know, how do I deal with such and such in life? And, you know, because navigating a if I like, you know, navigating a separation and stuff like that, like those are all things that, like, having our mom by our side to give us advice for, even just validation for, to know that she was supporting us in our decisions.
Yeah, has our back. Because we were lucky. Mm-hmm. We had a pretty amazing mom because she was a pretty phenomenal human being. She was classy and educated, but could get silly and goofy with you the next minute. And had such an array of life experiences that I do feel very robbed that I didn't even get to fully know her. Mm-hmm. And we were getting to the place where I was going to start to get to know her as a woman. Because I was getting to that place where I feel like I was going to become a woman.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, going back to, like, my struggles with my identity and self-acceptance and all that, like, sure, like, we can be very frank and say there were definitely ups and downs with me and my mom when it came to me coming into my own and living life truly and freely. And I feel like my mom and I were just finally getting to that really, really good spot, you know, where we could talk about stuff. If I wanted to, I could talk about who I was dating or stuff like that. She would ask me, you know, and I would be the shy one about it.
Yeah.
You know, but and then to kind of have her ripped away when I feel like we were finally in the best part of our relationship you know?
And we're, I mean, not to say we aren't grateful for the family that we have.
Of course, a lot
of people are, you know, texting us right now and checking in because of, you know, the victim impact statement. And we love that, but one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is when people are checking in with their best intentions, and people ask you, how are you? I wanted to ask you, Yusuf, like, when people say, how are you, how do you respond to that?
You know, I, like, frankly, like, usually it's just the, I'm fine, you know?
And why do you feel like you have to say that? I know you're not fine.
Yeah, I know you don't. I think it goes back to that whole societal discomfort. You know, nobody wants to actually have to catch that person that says I'm not fine.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, like, I'm too afraid to put that burden on people
because they feel like they have to fix it.
Mm-hmm. And especially when I'm at work, you know, what am I supposed to do when you ask me if I'm fine and I say no, and then I have to go into the classroom anyway and still go take care of all these children?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not fine and I'm taking care of these children, but now what?
Now you just
know. It's just in the air that I'm not okay. Right. You know, what is anyone actually going to do? I think
so you almost feel like you're not even safe enough, or you're worried about how that'll backfire, maybe even.
Yeah, I am very, very fortunate that I work at an amazing daycare, and, you know, I have definitely had a few folks come up to me and say, you know, do you need a few minutes, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, do you need a 10-minute break? You know, but not everybody has that, and I definitely don't have that option every time I need it.
Sure.
You know, and it is. It's how am I going to be perceived if I'm very honest and just say
vulnerable.
Because, you know, I mean, I work at a daycare, and, like, it can be very triggering to see a lot of kids with their parents or kids crying for mommy, even, you know, and there's plenty of times I have to pick up a kid and say, I miss my mommy too, bud, you know, but, like, you know, your mommy will be back soon. We're here to keep you safe, you know, but just hearing those words sometimes can really rip me apart, you know, because I get it. It's like, it's like, oh, man, I am that baby.
Yeah, because that's true. And it's just a societal expectation that it's like a quick nicety.
Yeah.
I'm fine, you know.
Yeah, or the other response is usually, it's just one of those days.
Yeah.
You know, just a very casual, it's one of those days, where it's like, okay, at least now it's an acknowledgement that it's a hard day.
Yeah, but
don't get to really, you know,
connect.
We don't have the liberty to act how we're feeling or... You know.
Well, and even when you say, like, I'm fine, like, even then I struggle with that because I feel so disingenuous about it because it's, I'm lying.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not fine. I'm never fine. Like, I'm not going to be fine. It's going to be a while before I'm fine.
Right.
Anybody that thinks I am, I'm glad that I've you know, succeeded in
fooling you,
you know, playing it off. But I really am. I mean, most of the days for a while, I was just trying to get through the day and not quit my job. Like, it was many days that I was just every day I was going to be like, this is going to be the day I'm going to quit.
Yeah.
And I can't really tell people that. But, yeah, it's just, you know, sometimes now, depending on who's asking the question, I'll be like, well, how much time
it's
do you have?
It's funny you say that, because when I basically started my job soon after mommy passed, and for me, it was almost like I have to prove that I can still survive.
Yeah.
You know, even though this isn't the most high profile, you know, like, crazy complex job in the world, you know, like, I have to prove that I can get out of bed every morning.
Yes.
And do something, you know, and just survive.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so funny that you say that you were on the verge of quitting your job, you know, and I'm just like,
I have to get you a job.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I have to go to a job, you know, like, I have to get out of bed and, like.
But for you, it's different because you don't have, like, little humans to.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no. Thank God. I am very privileged that, like, I am.
Well, no, I mean, it's just, like, for me, is it where, again, it goes back to different seasons of life, right? So what's therapeutic for one person might be terrible for another person.
Right. Yeah, especially because, like, towards the end, like, mommy and I were having a lot of conversations about getting me back into the real world, and she was helping me with a lot of my, not helping me as in like doing them for me, but she was really lighting that fire under my butt to get me back into the world, because I was honestly, like, I was having a few months of just bed rotting and depression and sadness, and she was just checking in on me, hey, any job apps today, babe? You know, and I was like, maybe tomorrow, you know. But and at, when she passed, I was actually about to fly up for an interview, just a few minutes away. And, you know, so I felt like it was really all lining up. You know, I was going to come move up, be near them and all that. And then she died. And then the job got, you know, obviously that was no longer...
Yeah, I remember I called you, and I was like, you need to cancel.
Yeah.
You need to cancel your interview and change your flight and come up here.
So that's why after she passed, I was like, okay, I'm going to come up here anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Make sure my sister and nephew and stepdad are all still trudging along, and I'm going to get my butt to work and, you know, do that for her, basically. Show that, you know, like, I'm still taking your advice and still moving through life how you would have wanted me to, you know.
Yeah, because
I'm not just bed rotting anymore. Like, I'm not that same person I was 6 months ago, laying in bed, refusing to, you know, cop to the real world. Like, I am going to face my grief every day, get out of bed, and do something, anything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think it's been helpful. What do you find to be, like, the annoying things that people say or things that are not helpful that, like, you almost are just like, really? Mm. Or, like, I want to punch you right now.
But oh, man.
What are some of the things that you feel like?
Honestly, I think it's a me thing because I struggle so much to make any sense out of this situation because I don't think we can make any sense out of having her torn away by such a stupid act. I think it's when people try to say, like, oh, it was meant to be, you know, like, it was just her time.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, there must be a reason for this, you know, trying to explain it away. I know it comes with good intentions, but it never feels good. Because, like, you cannot explain it in my head.
That's exactly the same for me.
Cannot make it make sense that, like, some dirtbag decided to drink and drive, and all of a sudden, like, all our lives are different now, and she's not part of it anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's, like, the same exactly for me. It's like, when somebody says it was her time, I'm like, no, it wasn't her time.
Right.
She had so much life to live. She had so much more. She was in her 50s.
The healthiest of all of us. Yeah. You know, she was
strong as an ox.
Yeah, like, her husband was soon to retire. So she was getting ready for, you know, soon she would have been retiring. I mean, she busted her butt for years and years and years, you know, working, making sure we never had to struggle for anything. And she didn't even get to reap the benefits of retiring and, you know, relaxing and enjoying life with her husband, you know, their golden years together.
Yeah, so the it was her time thing. It makes me like who do you, how do you know that? I mean, that gets me kind of upset. And then, you know, there's a reason behind it, or, you know, this is all meant to be. And I really just want to like curse at people when they say that, because I'm like, no, there's no freaking reason for this. Like, you know, somebody went and I think our brains try to make sense of things, and I think people want to fix things, and I get why they say things, and maybe that's helpful for them, but it's not helpful, you know, for everybody. And another thing is, you know, when people are like, be strong.
Ugh.
And I'm like,
I am. I'm like, standing in front of you and not in bed right now.
The fact that I'm like alive right now and awake is me being strong, you know, like, be strong, or, you know, you just have to move on for her and she would want you to do this, or, you know, it's like, you don't know. Everybody's at a different place.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually a really good one. Putting the expectations of a lost loved one on you, like framing their expectations for you. You know, mommy used to do that sometimes with dad.
Oh, for sure. She was a brown mom. Like, of course she did.
You know, she used to do that with daddy. Oh, my God. Daddy would be rolling in his grave if he saw you with that nail polish on or something like that. I'd be like, frankly, I think he's okay. But, you know, like, also, please don't do that. You know, please don't ever put words in somebody that's gone's mouth, you know, because you can't.
Yeah, you don't know what they would have said, or you might think you might have, but you know, it's unfair to put that emotional baggage on to say that, you know, your mom would have wanted you to. And believe me, this is something that I fight all the time, because I am the oldest daughter. So she came to me all the time about everything, but especially my younger brothers, you know, because I was put in that place of having to sort of like almost not co-parent, but be a sounding board of frustrations. And I'm like, well, blah, blah, blah. And she never listened to me anyways. But, but you know, just, you know, me trying to knowing like, oh, okay, mommy would have said this or that or wanted this or that. And I've tried very hard to hold my tongue, you know, to my younger brothers and say like, you know, these were the societal expectations. These were the religious expectations. These were the expectations of our immigrant parents, you know, and I have to bite my tongue to not sort of continue that cycle of expectations of, you know, just, you know, what.
And it's probably hard with like a brat like me who like even growing up was already the rebel against all those things.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then like, and it's like now it's like, okay, well, now both my parents are gone. Like, who am I?
Right.
Who am I trying to please? You know what I mean?
Right.
Besides myself.
And well, that's the thing that, you know, I've tried to, you know, wrestle with that too, is that when your guideposts are gone,
who, like, who are you still?
Who is
setting the bar
now?
Who
is your North Star? Right. And who is your guiding point, you know, when for so long it was my parents, it was my mother. I really did put that a lot of that. You know, I did look to her for that. And so now I have to sort of find my way. We're all floating around and trying to find our way in our path. But, you know, that's the stuff that's, to me, not helpful. But there are things that are helpful.
For sure.
You know, when, unfortunately, we know other people who have lost loved ones. And when somebody knows that pain, even if it's like a little different or a different relationship, but just seeing people in their pain, and they don't have to say anything. They can just listen, and not try to make sense of it. I feel like that's helpful. And also for me, something that's really, like, personally for me, I find when anybody shares a story about her, any story, it's like she comes back to life.
Yeah.
And so I am sort of desperate, honestly, for stories and memories about my mom because everybody saw her in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
She was my mom, mm-hmm. you know, and I knew her sort of in a professional sense. But how did other people have their relationship with her? Mm-hmm. How did they interact with her? What was she like with
right.
other people?
Right.
You know, and that's like, to me, like getting to know her. And
yeah.
so when people share their stories about her.
Yeah.
That is a gift. Like, I don't know how, it's such a gift.
Yeah.
And even with the victim impact statement, you know, I put out there, you know, if anybody had a story or an impact, because I want to show the judge, even if it's a one-line quote,
right.
that what kind of impact she had.
She made on...
Not just on her children.
On her, right. She made... She touched so many lives. It's actually crazy how I'm still getting messages from people.
Yeah. And
you
patients
know.
Of hers.
Yeah, patients, you know, coworkers, doctors, you know, all these people that message me once in a while and just say, oh my God, I heard about your mom, like,
yeah.
you know.
Somebody had just recently
right.
heard.
And yeah, I mean, actually, I remember, like, this kind of, like, coach my mom put me in touch with who was kind of, like, helping me with finding jobs and stuff like that way back in the day. You know, like, she helped mommy, too. Helped her with a lot of, you know, kind of like that more therapy side of it. You know, the helping you grow professionally and what you want out of your job and all that. And it was so refreshing to kind of meet someone that had kind of helped my mom with all this new age stuff that, you know, our old brown parents probably wouldn't believe in if it
yeah.
weren't, you know, like
right.
the self-help and the mental health and all that. And she just texted me, actually, saying, just heard about your mom, you know, and there's so little you can really say, you know.
Right.
All you can really say is, thank you for your kind words, you know. My mom loved you and thought of you very highly, you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing. She did
like,
love and care about people so much
yeah.
that when we say that, it's true. Like, there are just so many people she really just enjoyed and loved and had her stories with. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think for me, a gift is, or what is helpful is like when people share that and they remember her fondly. And then the other thing that I find helpful is really just like the real life practical stuff, you know,
yeah.
like not just like right when she passed, but like even now, it's just like sometimes it is hard to get through the day and you are,
yeah.
I have, you know, kids and I have work and there's laundry to do that never ends and food to make and, you know, just stuff to do. And so like the practical stuff is actually very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I could have like even 30 minutes or an hour to be not working and not with kids so that I can like maybe journal, you know,
right.
and grief and or think about her or read a book that's been
yeah.
helpful to me about grief, or meet with my therapist,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's been really helpful. And for me, I've also been lucky enough to sort of like figure out how to get connected to different resources. And so what's been helpful in that aspect is talking with a counselor, a therapist,
yep.
Specifically a grief counselor,
yeah.
A chaplain who's non-denominational, who is just a beautiful human being, and she has helped me so much. And it's those are the things that I do that I find
mm-hmm.
to be helpful.
Yeah, I'm super lucky that my job provides therapy, you know, basically during work once every 2 weeks or so,
mm-hmm.
you know, someone will come cover me for an hour and I'll just walk down the hall and there's a third party therapist.
Wow.
I could talk about whatever I wanted, you know, and at first, it's funny enough, when I first started talking to this therapist, I was like, you know, I don't really know if I'm ready to dip my toe into the grief.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually been so helpful every couple weeks just to go talk about it. Because A, it's very validating to check on my own progress, you know,
yeah.
because one thing that is very helpful is being very intentional and holding space for myself, you know, knowing when I just need a few minutes to think about her, talk about her, cry about her, you know. It's so hard to hold space for yourself and not just push it down and try to compartmentalize it all.
Yeah.
But that's so helpful. You know, talking to somebody, a therapist, she might not be a grief counselor specifically, but, you know, I'm sure I'm going to look into that once our sessions are kind of up.
Yeah.
And...
Well, and grief counselor is different than, like, a therapist, mm-hmm. you know, so that's why I've actually had all three things going on, and I do, and they're different. It's mm-hmm. it's a little bit of a different perspective, but also a lot of it is really just the time, the dedicated time to actually grieve and process,
right.
And I'm going to be honest, I get why people push it down and don't deal with it. It's terrible.
Yeah,
like, it feels like, it's not like, oh, you know, when you're nauseous and you vomit and you feel better. No. Like, you feel kind of like yucky and drained.
Oh, yeah.
And
even
the
after
whole
therapy,
rest of
like,
the day,
yeah,
it's like you don't feel good.
Yeah,
it's not.
Even after, like, our therapy sessions, like, therapy is work, honey. Like, it is
exhausting.
Like, you leave that session and it's like, oh my God, like, I really just let so much out that's like, just been inside for a minute, you know?
Like,
and it is like a little relieving, but like, I always find that I need a few, I need some time to process the actual therapy session,
right.
So even though it can be a little, like, iffy, like, going straight back into work after my therapy session, like, I always do take a few minutes at the end of the day to just decompress and go over what I talked about in therapy and, you know, really put my money where my mouth is in terms of taking care of myself and, you know.
Yeah, I think, and so that's something that, you know, I have to realize, too, that not everybody's going to do and handle things the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem I have because I'm very, like, controlling and I want to tell everybody what to do and how to do it. And, you know, they just tell me that, Subi, you can only do it and model it. And then mm-hmm. if it's helpful for you, then maybe people will do that, too. And that's all I can do is just say, like, what's helpful to me. And that's kind of what we wanted to do is say, like, what's been helpful to us. And if it helps you, then maybe look into it. We are going to post, I'm going to put in the show notes some resources of things that have been helpful. For example, my kids have gone to, like, some grief therapy and grief camp, which has been really nice so that they have tools in a way that they can understand as children.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we also wanted to put it out there to you guys you know, what is helpful to you when you're grieving and what things make you want to punch people in the face when they say it. Like, what's the worst comment you've ever gotten about a loss in your life? And the loss doesn't have to be a person. It could be a pet. It could be a job. It could be a relationship.
Yeah. Oh, grief? That's true. We grieve
grief
so
is,
many things.
Grief
we grieve lives.
Loss.
Yeah, we grieve lives that we thought we were going to have. We grieve so many things. And
our futures. You know, we grieve the future that we thought we were going to have. So I'm sure, you know, most everybody has had some type of grief in some way. So we were interested in hearing what you guys have,
mm-hmm.
if you would be vulnerable enough. I know it's a big ask, but just share with us. You can call and we could play it. Or
leave some comments in the show notes. Or we're going to have this posted on multiple platforms, so keep an eye out. And we would love to hear from you guys, love to hear your feedback. And that's pretty much it. We hope you enjoyed our lovely background piano music provided by our stepdad, Carl. And we also hope we didn't rant and ramble too much and that this was a fun and helpful, well, maybe not fun, but but definitely a helpful and profound conversation for you guys to listen to and hopefully interact with, and we'll hear from back from you.
Survive the holidays.
Amen. All right, y'all. This has been Katamita episode 3. We hope to see you back here.
Bye.